Welcome into another edition of the Stripe Show podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in for Froggy Wednesdays. And every single week we have a top tier PGA Tour player. And this week is no different. We are coming off the Open Championship, one that Colin Morikawa was able to win. That is another time that he won his first try at a major. He won the PGA when he first tried. And then last year, because of COVID, we didn't have an Open Championship. So this year, Colin wins again in his first try. So congrats to him. But somebody else who had a really good Open week, having a solid season, and was a part of the circus that we call the Bryson DeChambeau Circus on Saturday. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Taylor Gooch. Taylor, thank you so much for joining in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited.
You've had a great season, man.
Trying. It's been a weird one with obviously the beginning still on the back end of all the, you know, the COVID stuff. So
right.
It's been a weird one, but a good one.
Yeah. So first, before we even start, I want to say congratulations to you and your wife, Allie. You welcomed a new baby just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Thank you. I went straight from the hospital to a plane to London to a tournament and back home straight into changing diapers. So it's been a hectic last week and a half, 2 weeks.
Now, I did see you at the hospital. I saw on your social media. I did see you were practicing your putting in the hospital room.
Yeah, it's probably a little counterproductive because the greens are a little bit slower at the Open, but it was kind of all fun games.
Now, did they pour the hospital floor straight, or was there a little bit of break to it?
It was actually really straight. I need to find out whoever the builder was, see if they can come and build a home for me, make my home that flat.
Now, did you feel like going into the Open that your practice, without practicing that week, I'm not sure how much you were able to practice, did you feel that you were as prepared as you normally would have been for a major championship?
Yeah, obviously, it was a little bit of a different circumstance. I didn't touch a club starting the Wednesday before the Open, obviously, with having the baby and everything. So it was obviously a little unorthodox, but, for how much we golf, specifically me, on occasion, taking a few days off is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. It's almost can be a little bit of a refresher, reset for the mind. So, I always try to, especially come tournament week, try to schedule in at least an afternoon where I just completely get away from golf and kind of, like I said, a refresher, kind of getting away from it is just good for some, just for some rejuvenation. And so, I didn't get as much prep in as I, the standard would be, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
Now, what does a normal week look like for you? Obviously, you play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but what does a normal week, like that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, look like?
Well, it depends on if it's testing and COVID time or, there's so many variables. It can change quite frequently, but Mondays typically can be a travel day. Tuesday, I'll try to get at least 9 holes in, maybe 18, depending on the Wednesday pro-am. There's a pro-am on Wednesday almost every week. Sometimes right. We have to play 9, sometimes we have to play 18. So I try to not play 18 Tuesday, 18 Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So especially, like I just got off of about a month and a half ago now, I had a 7-week stretch of golf, seven straight weeks on the road. And so, I have to take so much into account, but everything is kind of predicated on the thought of being as prepared as I can be without sacrificing my weekend energy. I don't want to put so much time in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to the detriment that at the end of the week, I'm running on fumes. So, trying to balance that fine line of being as prepared and as ready as possible, but also kind of, keeping that energy up so that come the weekend, I'm ready to roll.
Is that a game plan you've kind of learned after being on tour for a year now, where you've kind of learned like, hey, sometimes I played really well on Thursday, Friday, and then I don't peak on the weekend when I really need the energy. So I'm kind of changed up your schedule a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. It's a huge learning process. Just learning how to be a professional, learning what makes you the best you, I'll never forget my first tournament as a professional. I got sponsored invited to the St. Jude's Classic in Memphis before it was a WGC. And I get there Sunday evening, and Monday I played 18 and I went in practice. Tuesday I went and played 18 and I went in practice. And I thought to myself, you know, I got to outwork everybody. This is what a professional does. I had all these thoughts and ideas of what a PGA Tour golfer was. And then fast forward, you know, however, 6-7 years later, I was playing with DJ at Riv, this last year. And we were talking about kind of prep, and the next tournament the next week was the Honda, which is in his hometown, and he doesn't play. And essentially he was like, dude, I figured out, like, when I'm home, you know, I don't need to be touching a club too much, you know? And so it's my point being, you know, my idea of what a pro was is different than, you know, what DJ's idea of being a pro, what pro is. And so, like, right, you know, you just have to figure out what works best for you. He's figured out what's worked best for him, obviously. And, you know, I'm still kind of trying to figure that out.
Now, I also want to thank you, because I know right now you're on a break from diaper duty, and you've taken your break today to join us here on the podcast. So I'm very appreciative of your time. And, you know, you really had a solid, solid finish at the Open Championship. Talk a little bit about what the golf course was like, what it was like over in Sandwich and playing four rounds at the in your first Open.
Yeah, man, it was, I mean, incredible. It's I haven't played the Masters, so take that into account when I say this. It's the best tournament that I've been to, the most just incredible experience. You know, it's just, you always hear about the vibe, the energy, you know, the environment is just different. The fans are just different. And until you actually experience it, I don't think you can really truly understand what that feels like and what that is. But I mean, it's everything that you always hear about and more. You know, the tournament, the people, you know, just the way it was organized. The RNA does an incredible job. And I mean, the golf course was obviously really cool. The unique part was it was actually really good weather, which for me, yeah, I don't correlate that to the Open Championship. So
right, usually it's raining and windy and just junk weather.
Yeah, correct. And we got some wind, but definitely no you know, open conditions type of wind. And then on Sunday, I mean, it was only blowing 5 to 10 miles an hour. Now, to be fair, I was talking with after the round, I was sitting with Max Homo, one of my good buddies out there. We were talking about the wind is a little different there, because there was I was telling him on the 10th hole, I had 177 pin. We were trying to fly at 170, and it was into the wind. Like I said, it was only blowing 5 or 10. And I had to rip a 7-iron. Now, my 7-iron is normally a 185 to 190 club. And so from 170, or I'm trying to hit at 170, it was only into a 5-10 mile an hour wind. And I'm trying to hit a shot 190, basically. So even though the wind wasn't howling, it's a heavy wind. So, you know, I can imagine when it starts howling, what it really gets like.
Can you talk a little bit about your Saturday? So, you know, Thursday afternoon, Bryson did not play well on Thursday. And then the whole thing started with the driver. He said the driver sucks. And then Cobra kind of snapped back a little bit and he apologized. And then Friday didn't go well. So Saturday you're paired with him. And by the way, you shot 3 under on Saturday, which I think you outplayed Bryson on Saturday. Is that the first time you had played with Bryson since all this hoopla with Cobra and Brooks and everything had started?
Yeah. You know, I played junior golf, college golf, am golf with Bryson. So I've known him for years. You know, he's obviously a different cat in a lot of ways, but I mean, it's the epitome of the media that has kind of created, you know, this kind of image that is Bryson. Cause man, I always tell people he truly is a good dude. But in the world of sports and fans, everybody wants an enemy. Everybody wants the protagonist and the antagonist. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And so it was, you know, interesting getting to play with him coming off of his comments. They, you know, obviously kind of got some blowback on. But he had some good drives. So, I mean, I don't know if there's a whole lot, because I think he shot. He didn't play too well Saturday. Kind of struggled, but then he kind of backdoored on Sunday. I think he shot like 500 on Sunday. So, you know, he's very polarizing for sure. But I always tell people, man, you gotta give the dude some credit because one, he's a major champion. Two, he reinvented kind of the game in which he plays in a
right
in a way. And he's unequivocally himself. You know, he's not trying to be anything he's not. And through all the criticism and all the crap that he has to deal with, he continues to truck on and you know, taking his game to new levels. So it's I told him after round two, I was like, dude, hats off to you. You just keep doing you, dude.
Do you think that all this that's going on, all the talk, whether it's from the Cobra stuff or whether it's the Brooks stuff, do you think it is affecting him at all? On the golf course, I'll say.
Yeah, man, at this level, I don't think you have the success that he's had or anybody on PGA Tour if you let things like that affect your play. So no, I mean, I don't think that's really kind of affecting him. You know, might be on his mind, but I promise you, when it comes game time and he's got to pull the trigger back, the last thing he's thinking about is any of that crap.
Rapsodo Mobile Launch Monitor. Improve your golf swing today. Pro level launch data in the palm of your hand. It is very accurate, within 2% of a $20,000 unit. The Rapsodo MLM app automatically tracks stats and stores video with Shot Tracer, helpful for club gapping and understanding true distances for each club. Rapsodo MLM provides immediate feedback data and creates a better practice environment, not mindlessly hitting balls. Extremely portable, cases about the size of a rangefinder. And you know what? You can use it both indoors and outdoors. I love this launch monitor. It's the Rapsodo Mobile Launch Monitor. Check it out at rapsodo.com. RAPSODO.com. Rapsodo.com.
Right. I mean, I did get a chuckle out of Brooks the next day. I was waiting for it. For Brooks the next day, go, I love my driver. I was hitting straight. I knew there had to be some comment coming from Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
I was waiting for him to show up on Saturday or Friday afternoon with, because I think he's an uncontracted player. I was waiting for him to show up with a Cobra driver on Friday just to hit it one time, just because that's exactly what would be the next move in the chess match between Bryson and Brooks.
Oh, that would have been classic. And dude, I love it. I love the, you know, I understand golf is a gentleman's game, but, you know, I personally wish there was a little bit more, it's called competitive nature. I don't mind seeing kind of this back and forth. I love it. I kind of wish there was more of it in this game.
Is there anybody on tour that you're a little bit competitive with? Whether, I mean, and not so much in front of the media, but is there anybody out there that you're a little more competitive with than others?
Man, not really. It's such a game of like, you're trying to be the best you. You're trying to beat yourself all the time, you know?
Right.
And so it's, I don't get focus on other guys too much. You know, I know a goal of mine is I want to be the best golfer that has come out of Oklahoma State. That's a big goal of mine. So
yeah,
I want all the Oklahoma State guys to do well, but I also want to beat all of them at the same time, you know? And so, you know, there's that competition of being within of being the best golfer from Oklahoma State. But there's no like, I mean, depending on the day, one of my good buddies out there is Kevin Streelman, and we both like us some wine. And so we'll have maybe some wagers on occasion. So there's some days I especially want to beat him to make sure I don't lose any anything we got going.
That's great. Are there certain guys you enjoy being paired with, like when you get your pairings on that Tuesday or Wednesday? Are there certain guys you're like, hey, I'm going to enjoy this pairing, and vice versa? Are there certain pairings where you're like, man, I'm just going to stick to myself? I don't really enjoy playing with this guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's the guys that are negative and self-deprecating and just talking all like, that's never enjoyable. And so, you know, the guys that are like that out there, whenever that happens, you're just like my caddy, his name is Malcolm. I just say, all right, man, we're gonna talk a lot today. But I have a, you know, anytime I get to play with some of the best in the game is awesome. I have a few buddies that I'm tight with out there. Like I said, Max, Strills, Harold Varner is one of my other good buddies. You know, when you get matched up with your buddies, it's always a good time. And generally speaking, it's some good vibes, good energy, and it's always a good thing for the better scores.
Is there a certain round or pairing that really sticks out in your head over the years as one that you were kind of hoping would happen at some point and it did?
Yeah. So like I said, Max is one of my best buds out there. In 2020 final round, at Riviera, I think we were top 10. It was Max, me and DJ. And long story short, Max had a putt on the last for par. I think he was like one back at the time. And, he had about a 20 footer to save par, and it kind of would have like given him a chance to win the tournament. And literally as he's about to hit the putt, someone yelled out "Gooch," and it just completely threw him off. He backed off, everyone booed, they kicked the person out. It was a whole thing. And of course he ended up missing the putt. Thankfully it didn't make the difference in him winning or losing. But I mean, obviously I didn't have anything to do with it, but I felt terrible. Right. The next year, which was this past February, we got paired again in the final round. Max, me, Matt Jones, third one in. We're top 10 again. We have, you know, we all have a chance to win. And I wasn't playing great. I was kind of traveling around, but was able to kind of get in the thick of things. And Max was playing great. And he ended up going and winning that tournament. And that was right. Just being there and seeing one of your best buddies go win a tournament that outside of a major was probably his dream tournament growing up there, you know, the whole thing. That was super special to see up close and in person. If there was anyone that I would want to win that day other than me, it was going to be him for sure. So that was special. That's one I'll forever remember.
That's awesome. So this year's been good to you, though. You've got a career top 10s this season, the most top 10s you've had in your career. You've got a career high on the money list going on, career high in FedEx Cup rank as well. And you played very well at the Players, T5 with the most birdies. So what is it that comes to, is there just something coming together this year, or is it more of just learning how to be a professional and learning how to be the best version that Taylor Gooch can be on tour?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the progression, you know. It's funny. We always talk about, until about the last 5 years or so, the peak of a PGA Tour player's career was usually in his early mid-30s. All of a sudden, guys like Matt Wolf and Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas, all of these, you know, young guns have kind of ruined what that used to be. And so there's still guys like me around that, you know, whenever I first turned pro, I was not prepared to be a professional golfer. And so it's taken me some time. And I just think I'm going to continue to grow and get better as time passes. And so, you know, my kind of whole routine from practice to preparation to training to everything is built on longevity and built on continuing to grow as time passes. And so, you know, I'm still continuing to learn courses and, you know, just get comfortable out there. And so, obviously this year has been good, and, you know, hopefully we'll just continue to keep trucking along.
Now, being on tour for what, 7 years now you've been on tour?
This is year five.
So being on tour for 5 years and going around, have you learned that there are certain golf courses that those are the best ones for you to play, and there's other ones that those are the good weeks you to take off and prepare for other things?
Yeah, for sure. You know, one of the kind of the blessings and the downfalls to my game is I hit it long enough. I putt it well enough. I don't have any like courses that are really like not suited for my game. It's a great thing, but it's also not a great thing, because there are guys that are just like, I just can't play this course. It's just, you know, it's not built for me. And so, you know, there are certainly courses that I enjoy more and I've had some success at. Some of my favorites, Torrey is incredible. Riviera, obviously I've played well there. Quail Hollow is a really good one. Usually when the scores are not super, super, super low and, you know, par is not going to hurt you. those type of kind of a little bit more challenging golf courses are kind of what my game is built better for. So anytime, whenever it's harder, that's what I'm always looking for. And so that's where I always try to kind of schedule, you know, make sure that I'm playing all of those courses that the scores aren't super low.
So when you've got a late tee time and you look and the early guys are going low, is that encouraging, or do you like when you look at it, you're on your late time and you say, hey, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 under is going to be good today, or vice versa?
Dude, I don't even like when I have a late tee time, I don't watch golf. No, I don't watch it. Don't pay attention. Don't worry about it. So I don't know how to answer that. I don't even watch it. I always get a workout in the morning and watch some shows or something, but I stay away from it. Like I said, we spend enough time out there. The last thing I need to be doing is grinding more, thinking about it more. So I, whenever I'm not out there, I'm not watching.
So not on your off weeks either. You don't watch golf.
I watched golf for the first time my off week at the US Open, just being with my dad on Father's Day on Sunday. And that being one of my favorite courses, and he hasn't been there. So it was fun to get to kind of walk him through the holes and kind of give him a little insight to kind of how he was playing and what to do and everything. That was the first time I've watched golf outside of, and in the Masters, of course.
I was going to ask you that. Tell me you watched the 2019 Masters when Tiger was able to close that out.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. And yeah, anytime that Tiger's involved, I mean, my 9-year-old self would still get pumped up.
Right.
Have you played with him ever? I have. Yeah. Yeah.
How was that? Was it everything you expected it to be?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's Tiger. There's no other explanation needed.
How are you not? Because as you said, your 9-year-old self. How are you not so nervous standing on that tee that you're like, I'm gonna miss this ball. I don't want to hit it sideways. I don't want to embarrass myself in front of this guy.
Yeah, man. He's seen it all. I mean, we've seen it all at this point. Those kind of nerves aren't for me, don't come into play. It's just more of a sense of just complete excitement, you know? So it's pretty awesome.
That's cool. Who do you work with now as your swing coach?
So I've just started recently working with Boyd Summerhays. And he's another Oklahoma State guy. He played golf at Oklahoma State. And this spring we started working together. And it's been good, man. Well, I'm excited for what we're doing.
And so what are you guys working on now? Cause as a guy who just plays for fun, I feel like I'm always working on something and I have too many swing thoughts going on. So what, as a pro, what's something that you guys are working on now that's obviously working in the right direction because you're playing so much better?
Yeah. You know, so we started working actually right around the players' time. First couple months, we just got to know each other. He got to know my tendencies, my swing keys, kind of how I just swing it in general. And we've kind of started to lay a foundation for what I want to do moving forward. You know, it's always trying to be aware of like what your tendencies are. You know, for me, when I struggle, my kind of go-to golf shot is a little cut. I like to work it both ways, but when things get tight, I want to make sure I can hit that little cut shot. And whenever I get a little bit off that cut, it starts cutting too much. And so we're always trying to work towards, you know, eliminating that miss. But specifically right now, kind of a goal that we're going to start, you know, working towards, you know, long-term is driving the ball. I hit it far enough. Of course we can always hit it further, but, if I can get the ball in the fairway, I'm pretty good. And so we're gonna try hitting the fairways with driver, especially. That's what, we're gonna kind of make a goal and focus on moving forward is to try to get a lot better driving the golf ball.
Coming out of Oak State, you obviously had in your mind what it was going to be like being on tour. And you've talked about the struggles of learning through the 5-year period. What would you say is the biggest difference that in your mind you thought what professional golf was that you've had to adjust to now being on the tour for 5 years and becoming a vet?
Man. So these guys are really good out here, but they're not perfect. Like we're not perfect. And so you have this idea, because when you watch PGA Tour, all you see is guys that are winning tournaments, the guys that are in the lead, the guys that are in contention. And so you see this like great, great golf, because that's what, you know, the TV mostly airs, other than, you know, the three or four guys that they air no matter how they're playing. And so, you know, you have this idea that of how great and how perfect you have to always be, when in reality you don't. You know, sometimes finishing 33rd is not a bad week. You know, this last week I finished, I think, 33rd, and that was not a bad, you know, I played good golf and it was actually really close to being really, really good golf. And so, you know, not getting down on yourself whenever you aren't playing great golf,
right,
is a huge, you know, a huge key. And so I think that, along with, you know, the idea, like I was saying earlier, the idea of you have to put all this time in, you have to outwork everybody and do all this that like your mind tells you you have to do to be great. Well, that looks different on everybody. I mean, like I said, DJ practices differently than Bryson does. And so, you know, just figuring out what kind of routines work best for you is a huge, huge key. And it's a huge learning process to figure that out.
Right. And you were on the Oak State team with Wyndham Clark, correct? You guys were teammates?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of years.
That's cool. So how was it? What was that? Were you guys roommates? When you would travel, were you guys buddies then?
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. He's been one of my good buddies since then. So he roomed mostly with Jordan Niebrugge. But yeah, I mean, we play, he actually works with Boyd Summerhays as well. We play practice rounds almost every week together. He actually still owes me a few shekels from Memorial, which he still hasn't paid me. So that interest is adding up. So, but no, man, he's a good one. And he's one of the, one of the most talented dudes out there. He, man, when he gets comfortable out there, he's going to light the world on fire.
Yeah. He seems like a really good guy. Did you know when you were, cause you were a junior when he was a freshman. So did you know your junior year, seeing him young, like, hey, this kid's got it, he's good?
Oh, for sure. So my freshman year, I played with the team was Peter Uihlein, Morgan Hoffman, Kevin Tway, me, and another guy named Sean Einhaus. And so, you know, three guys that, you know, PGA Tour players. And so I got to see some, you know, great talent, great players right into school. And when he got there, I told everybody, I'm like, he's better than those three guys, like more ability. He's got more talent, more capability. And so he bombs it. He's got crazy speed. He's one of the best, if not the best chippers out there, I think. Putts it really well. I mean, he does everything really, really well.
Now, how old were you, Taylor, when you realized maybe I do have enough to be on tour? Maybe I am good enough. How old were you?
So it's crazy. But when I was 11 years old, there was this little event in Norman, Oklahoma, where some junior golfers got to play with, ironically, with some professional golfers from the University of Oklahoma. And I got paired with Craig Perks, who had just come off of winning Players Championship. And I remember thinking, dude, like, he's good, but I think I can do this. Like,
right.
All he, you know, of course, I'm ignorantly thinking at the time, like, the only difference is he hits it further than me. But when I was 11, I thought to myself, you know what? I think I have a chance to do this.
Wow, that's awesome. Kudos for you following that dream.
Yeah.
That's awesome. At one last thing I do want to talk to you about is a funny story earlier this year. I guess you had made a couple bogeys and some guy clapped back at you on Twitter for making three bogeys in a row. And you were actually, your first response was nice. Like, hey, did you bet some money on me? If you did, I'll take care of you. Like, you were being a good dude. And then he starts that he can beat you. How did that end up?
Yeah. So obviously he was, sorry.
No worries. He wants to be on the podcast too.
Yeah. So obviously I did not play well at Tampa, and I was literally headed to the airport when I get somebody who tweeted at me basically like, you know, you're terrible. And I was like, okay, let's kill this dude with kindness. And so, And I was like, all right, did you bet on me? Because I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'll just Venmo you 20 bucks or whatever that you lost on me. And, you know, we'll call it good.
Right.
And instead of like responding back to, yeah, I bet on you, blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, I bet on you. In fact, instead of betting on you, I should bet against you, or, you know, something like that. Like, I'm,
right.
you know, I could whoop you for how many putts you missed that week. And to be fair, I did miss a bunch of putts that week. But I was like, oh, okay, well, this just turned in a different direction. I don't mind this direction. So what do you want to do? Like, let's meet up somewhere. You tell me time and place and I'm there. We'll, if you think you can beat me, let's do it.
Right.
And so he was like, yeah, New York, this mini putt or whatever place, like we're going to go have a putt competition. And it just unloaded from there. All these people started tweeting back and forth. And sure enough, I mean, I took a screenshot of it. I was like, dude, I'm actually headed to the airport. I can change my flight really quick. And instead of going back home, I can come up to New York. There's a flight to LaGuardia tonight. I'm on it and I'll see you in the morning. Right. And true to form, the keyboard cowards, you know, availed, and he didn't respond back after that.
Not.
But no, it was a fun little, kind of interaction. Like I said, it's in a game and a gentleman's game. I wish there was a little bit more kind right. of competitive nature in it. So I like it. I like it.
No, I love that stuff. And these, you know, they are. I love how you call them the keyboard cowards, and they're always there. You know, the people who are supportive when you're playing bad. I saw it last week. When what happened to JT Poston, and we're actually talking to him next week on the podcast. People giving him a hard time when he went double bogey bogey, and it's like, you know what, it's easy when you're sitting on your couch, but when you go play your buddies, it's hard. Imagine what it's like when you're playing on TV against professionals for $1 million prize. I mean, it's the everything is amped up.
It's the old adage of the man in the arena. So unless you're there and been there, done that, It's easy to sit on your couch and talk about it. But again, you know, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing if not for the fans. So I appreciate it. I like it. But if you're going to give it, just be ready to get it back.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, I do have one question for you. What is worse? Because I follow you on Instagram. And so yesterday I saw the explosion that happened with your new child yesterday.
Yeah.
But what's worse? A bad day on the golf course where you're struggling with everything, or the worst poopy diaper change?
Oh God, bad day on the course for sure. Because the bad day on the course, that could be like a 5-hour day. Like that can be prolonged. At least from my early experience, the poopy diaper is at least you can get that over with quickly. But and it's in your control to an extent. Like you know what's coming. It's just a bunch of poop. And you're prepared for it. When it's a bad day on the golf course, you don't know what's coming. So I would definitely take a bad poopy diaper day than a bad day on the course.
That's good. I can't disagree with you there. Taylor, I appreciate it, man. What's your upcoming schedule look like?
I'm going to take the next few weeks off, and then I will play the Wyndham the week before the FedEx playoffs start, and see if we can make a little run.
Now, you're in the playoffs now, correct?
Yeah.
You're in the first two events, I believe.
Yeah, it'll be close on the second one right now. As of right now, I'm in it. It's top 70 and gets into the second one. I'm around 55th or something like that. But that'll change, you know, over the next few weeks. Some guys will pop ahead of me. So hopefully we can get to the second one, and then hopefully we can get to East Lake, the Tour Championship. That would be sweet.
Good deal, man. I appreciate your time. Good luck with your with the new baby, and good luck to you and your wife, and good luck on your season, and hopefully it just goes up from here, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. We'll have to do it again. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
it.
Man. I appreciate your time. We'd love to have you back on some other time.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you, buddy.
All right.
I just want to interrupt this interview real quick and give a shout out to my friends over at Encore Golf. Encore provides some of the most cutting-edge technology in a golf ball that I have ever seen. Their team in Buffalo, New York is changing the script of golf technology through their perimeter-weighted designs, which offer players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course. With their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show.